There seems to be a lot of talk these days about student trauma. What about teacher trauma? Do teachers experience trauma? Well, obviously, teachers have some trauma they bring with them from childhood and other life experiences, but does teaching a class and interactions with students themselves cause teachers to experience trauma? We think so, but does the system of education feel the same way? Today, we are blessed to have Mandy Frelick join us on the show to discuss teacher trauma and teacher burnout. Mandy passionately encourages educators to create innovative change in their classrooms. An experienced director of innovation and technology, technology integrator, and teacher, she has experience at many levels of the organizational structure. Her interest lies in reinvigorating and re-engaging teachers back into their profession, as well as what's needed to support teachers in their pursuit of innovation and divergent thinking and teaching. She consults internationally with school districts and post-secondary institutions in the effective use of technology to support great teaching, mental health support for educators, and how to create organizational change. We hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed speaking with Mandy.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path.
Hey, welcome everybody to The Peg Doesn't Fit. Today, we've got an excellent guest. Mandy Frelick is joining us all the way from Wisconsin. How are you today, Mandy?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
So I found you on Twitter and you have a fascinating Twitter page. But what really stuck out to me is that you started as a tech director and you have moved into now an SEL advocate role. Can you take a minute kind of to discuss how in the world that happened and kind of just maybe your career path to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, I think if we think of how mental health and technology go together on the day to day, we would be able to see that link. But for me, it really was sort of one path that diverged in the woods, like that kind of thing. I took the road less traveled. I was a teacher that really loved technology, but I also became burnt out. And so I left the classroom to be able to become a tech integrator. And then eventually I became a tech director. That was a passion area of mine. And I really did love it. I was leaning hard into it to try to heal my burnout. And because there was no directions for this, there was no instructions for it. And so I really had sort of two passion areas going on at once. And just recognizing teachers as humans, which I felt like we weren't doing enough of, recognizing their mental health, their SEL support that they needed was just something that really appealed to me because of my own experiences.
Yeah. And I think that is definitely something that, because trauma is all the rage in education. I mean, it's everywhere. We're talking about trauma and it's all focused on student trauma, but I don't think as a system, we give enough credit to the fact that our teachers, they may be coming to us with trauma that they developed earlier in life, or teaching itself might be causing some trauma. So I'm excited to talk to you and learn about your journey.
You have written a series of books, but despite that large series, you started with The Fire Within, Lessons from Defeat that have ignited a passion for learning. What inspired this book? And how can we find passion from that defeat, the defeat of others? I think normalizing failure is an awesome thing to do. So I'm excited to hear your answer on this.
And you hear a lot about that normalizing failure, right? I think that. First, The Fire Within was the first released, but I actually wrote Divergent EDU and The Fire Within in tandem. So I think The Fire Within was just done first, so it was the first one released. But The Fire Within really came from sort of that, path that I was talking about. And the idea that I felt when I was a teacher that one of the things I needed to hide and I needed to be embarrassed about was my past and the trauma that I had suffered as a kid. And because at that time, if you suffered trauma and you had depression or you had anxiety or you had PTSD, like you were weird. And it was very common and still is in some ways for people to think that if you have those things, the kids can catch it, right? They're going to somehow get those things from a teacher who's like that, which of course we know isn't true. And part of the Fire Within was, it was a goal to really humanize teachers. It was created to bring attention to the fact that we do have people that come into this profession with their own stories and their own traumas that they went through, and that they do use their experiences to make life better for their students, to make educational life better for their students. And one example that I often use is that when I was a kid, I had a pretty abusive childhood. And one of the things that I needed to be able to do when I walked into a room with adults is to be able to read the room very quickly. I needed to know if I was safe. I needed to know how I needed to adjust myself for somebody else quickly in order to keep myself safe. And as I became a teacher, that idea of reading the room really helped me when my students came into the classroom. I was able to see very quickly what kind of day we were going to have. I was able to adjust on the fly if I was about to do something that I knew was not going to work. And I was an elementary teacher, you know, so I could do that a little bit. I could flex my time a little bit to accommodate my students. And so it was sort of that idea. It was the idea of taking things that we normally felt like we needed to hide and we needed to feel bad about and saying, no, you know what? People have gone through these things. It stinks. And it's terrible. However, we don't need to feel embarrassed about that. There are things that we can take from it that make us teachers, that elevate our teaching in a different way.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I'm glad that you took your voice and decided to share it with others, because I really feel like I've kind of been a fish out of water in the educational system, because I had such a negative experience with education myself growing up. But at the same time, that negative experience that I had has really empowered me as an educator to build connections with students that other teachers maybe don't get along so well with, because I was that kid, right? So I can have that conversation. So thank you for taking the time. And I'm glad that you informed us that Divergent EDU and The Fire Within were kind of on the same path, because I think, because you have a website, divergentedu.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just so our listeners know, they can go to divergentedu.com, and you have a whole series of books with an awesome flyer, Fire Flame. I'm making sure that the Hunger Games didn't contact you and because you kind of got that Hunger Games flame theme going, and I like it how they all roll together. But let's stay on the trauma topic, because trauma is a big time word in education. It's getting thrown around a lot. And I know that you had a blog post that kind of talked about maybe the danger of overusing the word trauma, because it's in education, we tend to coin words that whenever you go into an interview, you want to make sure you use those words, because those are the big thing that everybody's doing right now. But the problem is sometimes we use those words so much, we forget where they came from. So can you kind of talk about maybe the danger in where we are right now with overusing the word trauma, and if that's kind of affecting the practice that we're getting out of it?
Sure. So I want to sort of start out by saying that just because I think that the word trauma might be being overused doesn't lessen the fact that people are traumatized, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't want to take away by saying that, I don't want to take away from people who truly have suffered trauma. I just think that in some ways, trauma has been being used very similarly to how we've been using the word burnout. And, you know, like for years, we've used the term burnout as something that we say when we're just tired. You know, we come out from a long meeting and we say, I'm feeling really burnt out from that meeting, which isn't really the true meaning of burnout, which is you know, medical diagnosis that you can actually get that can be very serious and lead to depression and anxiety and all of those kinds of things. And I think the word trauma is being used very similarly to that. A person goes through an adversity and they recognize that as an adversity, but we call it trauma. Because trauma really isn't trauma. And this is really difficult for people to sometimes wrap their minds around, because some things just, some situations feel like they would always be traumatic, but trauma is not what has happened. Trauma is how an individual has coping mechanisms to deal with a situation that happened. So for example, if you and I go through the same exact, you know, we're in the same car for a car accident, and you go to counseling and you're able to let it go and you're good after a, you know, a few weeks. And I also go to counseling, but I'm not able to get back into a car for a year. That is a difference in coping mechanisms with that particular trauma. So it's not the car accident, it's how we have perceived our ability to deal with that car accident. So what my fear is that we're going to start using the word so often that it lessens the impact of what's actually happening. I don't want people to become immune or numb to the word trauma, because it is very serious and there are repercussions for traumatic events that we, frankly, as an education system, are not equipped to deal with. You know, a perfect example, my third child, who is my older daughter, she is in college, and she messaged me the other day and she said the electricity went out in the building, and as it was coming on, the speaker system did some really loud thumps. I think that we've probably experienced that in being in schools, you know, that thumping that sometimes happens as speaker systems are coming on. And she said that 100% of the class thought it was a school shooting. And that is PTSD. That is not PTSD from being in a school shooting, because she's never been in one. That is PTSD from knowing that school shootings happen. This is the kind of thing that we're not addressing, and we're not even equipped to address. That is the kind of trauma that I'm talking about. So I don't want to lessen the use of the word. And I also feel like we have a lot of trauma that we're not addressing all at the same time.
Well, let me ask you this, because when you talked about that, it kind of made me think of this, that, you know, because trauma is all the rage and our focus is all on student trauma. And there seems to be some kind of solution that somebody up higher than me has decided that, well, one of the ways that we solve this trauma is by not giving kids consequences, you know, because we understand that they come from a traumatic experience. So they might, you know, let's cut them some slack. Well, the flip side of that is that behavior might be getting a little worse because students are not being disciplined. And I know a lot of our listeners can relate to this. But do schools even think about the amount of trauma that teachers might be experiencing on a daily basis from the interactions that they get from other students? I mean, right. It's one thing to bring trauma from childhood abuse or childhood whatever. It's another thing to come to school and be disrespected and treated in such a way that, but I mean, should schools be supporting teachers?
Yeah.
I don't know what you've come up with the answer. I don't even know what the question is.
So remember how I said that my path had many different, you know, everything kind of converged into one place to give me my path that I was on. One of the things, so I had my own trauma that I was dealing with. I had my burnout that I was dealing with. One thing that I experienced on this journey is, this was a long time ago prior to the pandemic. I was working with a paraprofessional who had gone to the hospital because she had been bitten by a student. And she had been bitten by the student until it bled. And so she had to go and she had to get a tetanus shot. And when she came back, you know, because I'm human and everybody's like, oh, show me what happened, you know, I said, let me see the bite. And so she pulled her sleeves up to show me the bite, and she had bruises all up and down her arms. And I'm going to be totally honest, my first reaction was, oh my gosh, her husband is beating her or something. Like, she is, you know, she's bruises everywhere. And I said, what happened? And she said, oh, you know, sometimes the kids get aggressive. And she's like, if you see my, you know, if you're shocked by my arms, you should see my legs because they're short, you know, because she was working with K2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked and I was floored because I felt like being that I was in an abusive situation when I was younger, I knew that feeling of being scared that you're going to be emotionally or physically attacked. I understand these are kids. However, that doesn't change the perception of abuse as the human who's getting it done to them. Even if they can say it's okay, even if they can try to reason it in their head, it is still abuse. And so that was one of the things that was the catalyst for my journey as well, was these experiences that teachers had in the classroom that were very specific to teaching that could cause trauma as well. So I developed, you know, 8 reasons why educators emotionally disengage from their work. Teacher trauma is one. And teacher trauma includes things like harassment and battery by students and parents, school shootings, the death of the unfortunate death of like a student or colleague, you know, that because we have such a close connection with them. And when we talk about student behaviors and I discuss emotional disengagement, student behaviors for teachers is one of the top reasons why they have cited that they're leaving their job. In my opinion, this is because a lot of teachers stay in their jobs because of the students. Like, they don't like the politics. They don't like the initiatives. They don't like the administration sometimes. You know, they don't like those things, but they stay in for the students. When the students start to get difficult to deal with and they're causing emotional harm, that's going to be the last straw they need to leave, like the cutting of the cord. As far as administrators or anybody really dealing with student behavior, a student who has gone through trauma, who's exhibiting behaviors, they need additional support. Support means, in some cases, that they need to be able to recognize damage that they've caused. In some cases, and I think it's different. I think in some cases it's restorative practices.
Yep.
In some cases it's going back, and it might be the tradition, not the traditional ways that we need for behavior like detentions, but it might be something that we align to the things that they've done so that they can, you know, go back and say they're sorry or make amends or whatever it is. That doesn't mean that we also don't hold them accountable for the things that they've done. And I think that, like you said, one of the things that leadership is doing right now is they are so afraid of, quote unquote, causing more harm that they're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so students' behaviors are on the rise. And some of those behaviors are violent. They're, you know, some of those behaviors are dangerous. And then we have the teachers who are trying to deal with that. I was working with a school district where a teacher stayed after one of my presentations, and she said, I'm struggling so much because I have these dangerous behaviors in my classroom, and the administration just keeps telling me to do SEL as a form of behavior modification. And I said, that's not a thing.
Right. Like,
that's not actually how SEL works. But that's what they were telling the teachers. So of course, behaviors were continuing. So I think that something that districts are really missing out on is that they assume that because they learn the word trauma, that they're all of a sudden trauma informed. That does not create the environment that you need in order to work with students with trauma. You have to know more than that. Like, you have to be all in.
That was such a loaded answer. And it, really,
sorry about that.
Well, you know, because we don't want to come off as I don't want this to be a negative episode, but this is where people are right now. This is how they feel. So what's the solution? I mean, so we're dealing with trauma by not increasing more trauma, by not giving consequences, and schools are eroding. And I think that is a national concern, that the student behavior is fully eroding to chaos in some particular instances, right? So what's going to be fixed? We come back and drop the hammer and now we become over punitive?
That's not going to help either, right?
Right. So, and I'm glad that you brought up restorative practice, because we've done some restorative practice talk around here, and I think restorative practice is great. And I think making sure that the student understands how their behavior affected other people and why their behavior is not acceptable, that goes a long way, because that's the only way you're going to get someone to change is for them to understand why their behavior is not okay. Right. But I think it's okay to have that conversation and say, but guess what? You're still suspended.
Go ahead. And the thing is too, is that, I want to go back to like what you said. I don't want this to be a negative episode. And that's kind of the downfall in some ways of the work that I do, mm-hmm. is that we can sit and talk about the students' assets and what they bring to the table all day long. And I want to hear it. And I love that. And that's fantastic. But we cannot only talk about that. In order to help somebody, in order to give support, we have to recognize where it is that they need support. And just because, you know, I had somebody say something to me once, I only want to recognize the students' good behaviors. I'm not going to address, I don't want to talk about that they have mental health issues because that's so negative. Here's the thing. As someone with mental health issues, I want you talking about my mental health issues. I want you deciding how you're going to help me. And then I want you getting me that help, because just telling me how smart I am is not helping. That's not curing my depression. That's not helping my anxiety. Like that is very nice. And I wish so much that teachers could live in nice, that we could stay in that positive space where we never have to talk about anything negative for kids. That would be amazing. But it's not the reality right now. So I think from the standpoint of helping kids, I see a lot of these platitudes that are things like, when students get, you know, when students flip their lid, or when they're in a state of dysregulation, they can't learn. And that will be like the entire platitude. Mm-hmm. And that's fantastic to know, except that that is our job, is to teach kids. So thank you for the platitude. Information is fantastic. Like we respect that. However, tell me how to do that. And that's in the space that is the space that I want people to understand, that sometimes restorative practices are going to be the way to go. Sometimes, you know, there might be something else a student needs. Every single behavior that we can't control is stemmed from a mental health issue. It could be, you know, like when we look at the kids that are, you know, I had a student even way back when, who every time I walked past his desk, he tried stabbing me with a pencil or with scissors, you know, and it stemmed from a mental health issue. Like when we have kids like that, we need help. We as teachers are not equipped to deal with that. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to behavior, like we need to know how we're supposed to help students understand what their, like the danger that their behavior has caused, the damage that their behavior has caused. We need a system that helps students repair that in some way. And we need a system that teaches students the right way to act. And that sounds punitive and it sounds silly, but here's where I'm going with that. When I became a mom, I had nothing but a wrong example. I had no idea how to be a mom. I had never learned that. That was, and so what did I do? Some of the things that I started out doing as a mom were the wrong things because I had no example of how else to do that. Some of these kids do not have an example of how to act. And that's not a bad thing on them. It's not their fault, but they still have to be taught how to do it. And so we have these things and we need mental health professionals in order to help us as well. So that's kind of also probably a loaded answer, but there are lots of things that we have to do. And there are some things that we just were going to need help to do because as teachers, we were not taught this.
I wanted to ask about culture, but I'm also thinking about some of my staff actually have some traumatic history in their life, maybe similar to yours. Sometimes even when we're doing staff meetings and we're talking about this stuff, it brings it all back up for them too. And so, but yet for the others, they're like, oh, I love this stuff. And they're ones with very similar pasts to the one who says, I feel sick. I can't even be here anymore. And like you said, trauma is how you respond to stuff. But I guess I wonder there's probably no easy answer that can just blanket fit for everything, but how do you work with staff? I'm a principal. So I think, how do I work with staff to create a positive culture among the staff so we can feel supportive and supported by each other within the building? How do you suggest doing that?
Sure. So that's going to be a journey of healing, and that's something you're going to have any control over because it's a very right. individual thing. I can go through something, somebody else can go through childhood trauma, and I'm in a certain place in my healing journey and they're in a certain place in theirs. I may be able to listen to you. They might not. That might be very triggering for them. Both places are okay because it's both our own journeys, right? So I think that one step that I already heard you say is that a staff member can say, this makes me sick. Having the kind of culture where somebody can bow out from something without being made to feel bad, being made that they're missing out on something is a really important piece of that. Because if I'm being triggered, chances are my body feels sick. I feel like I'm shaking. I might not feel like I can breathe. I'm not listening to you because I'm dysregulated. So there's the option to be able to get up and leave and come back to it when I'm expecting it can be one thing that can be super helpful. Another thing that you can do, and again, this is so personal, so you'd really have to ask your staff. Like the best thing to do would be to say, hey, we have to talk about this stuff. How do we want to handle it? Because I know some of you are going to struggle and some of you are going to be okay with it. Let's come to sort of maybe create some norms around what happens when you talk about trauma and when you talk about behaviors and things like that. Create some norms, stick to those norms, that might help. But really just making it so that people have a say or have a say, I guess, in the amount of participation that they have. Giving me the choice is going to help me not feel trapped as somebody who has experience with this. So, if we're talking about a child whose behaviors are elevated and, they've suffered abuse at home, and if I'm being triggered by that, being comfortable enough to get up and just to leave room for a minute is going to make me, just having that choice is something that will mean the world to me, So it sounds like you already have the input of your staff, which is really important. And, just having that, creating that safe space to be able to talk about it. That, and then I would say one more thing is, I was thinking about this and I forgot it, so I'm coming back to it. One more thing would be being very proactive when you're going to have those conversations. So if you're going to talk about anything, restorative practices, you're going to talk about trauma, you're going to give out a new initiative by the district, whatever it is, putting that out in an email to the staff a few days before. On this day, we're going to be talking about this thing. You know what our norms are for talking about these. If you don't feel comfortable, please let me know. But it's also going to give me, if I feel like I'm going to be triggered by that, it gives me 3 days to prepare myself for that. And so I might do some mindfulness practices in the morning. I might take some deep breaths before I go into the meeting. I'm going to be prepared for that with that heads up.
I really like that. And I have definitely not done that. So I will add that into my personal practice of being a better leader and giving a heads up.
What I really have appreciated the most about this episode is that it's been a pretty real conversation. We're not shying away from things that concern us or things that are, say, going wrong with what we see is going wrong with education. And I think that too often we kind of ignore the elephant in the room and we don't want to talk about the hard stuff. Let's just act like it's not there and just, you know, do some counseling. I mean, I don't know. So I appreciate the fact that we are having a very real conversation here. And I know that some listeners are being reminded of some daily practices within their own school and whatnot. Let's talk about this though, because we don't, you know, we have a lot of teachers that listen to the show and I'm sure we got some principals and who knows, maybe we got some district leaders, but not all buildings or not all leaders do exactly what you just said. They don't provide that out or they don't do that. So what about the teachers that are listening that feel that they work in a dysfunctional culture in their building, yet they still want to have some success within their own classroom? Do you have any advice for trying to create like a culture within a culture that where a teacher that doesn't feel supported or they don't feel however it is they feel, but they still kind of want to come to work because in their little world, it's workable?
Sure. Yeah, I would say at the most basic level, like be the leader in the classroom that you wish you had in the school. You know, dysfunction rears its ugly head in so many different ways in a school that it's hard to necessarily give a lot of advice on how to change culture. Like it takes more than one person to do that, really. But in your classroom, if you're determined to make it the most safe place possible and you want to make sure that students feel supported, like be the person that you wish you had as a leader, show vulnerability. And that doesn't mean using your kids as counselors. That would be swinging the other way. They don't need to know about your marriage problems, nothing like that. But, you know, if you're having a bad day, even with my fourth and fifth graders, if I was having a really bad day, I said so, you know, like I said, guys, you know what? I'm having a really sad day. Like I feel like nothing's going right for me today. Have you ever had one of those days? And of course the kids are like, yes, I've had those days too, you know? And I would always say like, I know I'll feel better tomorrow. Like I'm going to work on some things to feel better tomorrow. I'm going to make sure that I relax today. I'm going to make sure I get lots of water in today. But just know that Mrs. Freilich's feeling a little sad. So and I would joke with them and say, go easy on me, you know, and of course they would, because the students will do that kind of stuff when you're vulnerable and you've created those kinds of relationships and that set the tone for when kids were having a sad day to come up to me and say, Mrs. Freilich, I'm really having a sad day. I know tomorrow will be better, but today is really sad. And I'd be like, you know what, buddy? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that that's happening. Is there anything that I can help you with? No, Mrs. Freilich, I'm just having a bad day. Can I get a drink of water? You know, like those are the kinds of conversations I was having. And so I think that piece of just being what you know you need is really important, because how I would have loved to have had a leader that came to me and said, you know, anything vulnerable and where I could say, oh my gosh, I've had those days too. I'm so sorry that's happening, you know? So I would say that really looking into some of the pieces of psychological safety and how psychological safety is created in a classroom is really important. A lot of times, we have to be very careful with the use of sarcasm, for example, because sarcasm can be something that ruins psychological safety. I know some people use it as humor and some people are really good at using sarcasm with humor without being hurtful. But making sure that when you're doing it, that you're still maintaining a safe place. And, I would say another thing that is probably going to sound silly, but I feel like is really true, is to, when a student is talking to you, to do your best to give them your full attention. This was really hard for me as a teacher, because you have a million things going on and you're trying to be proactive for what you know is coming next. And you're trying to like set the kids up and you're managing a million kids and like trying to, you know, listen to this one person who's in front of you. But kids know when they're not being listened to. And if you want to create a student who doesn't talk to you, you're going to show them you're not listening. So just being able to put things aside for 5 seconds, listen to what they have to say, give them your full attention. That's one, another way that you can create that safety within your classroom.
So you're kind of answering our finalish question, but how, if you could give one inspiring piece of advice to our teachers that are listening today, or even our admin, because I would love one too. What can you tell us to just encourage us to keep fighting the fight, going after it? I like how you said, be what you need. So I definitely heard that as one of them. But what else would you recommend?
I would say that everybody who's in the teaching profession got into it for a reason, right? And I sometimes cringe with the whole remember your why stuff, even though I think that it's really important. It's definitely been overused in the last few years. But along those lines, like you got into this profession for a reason. You got into it to make a difference. And the fact that we've gone through something, being the pandemic, that nobody in our lifetimes would have ever guessed was going to happen. And we not only went through the pandemic, but we did it by changing everything that had been done in education for the last million years overnight. I know that people are tired, and I know that people need healing, and I know they need to take a deep breath, and they feel sometimes like they're underwater. But at the end of the day, we are in a profession that is like changing the lives of people. And we got into that profession for that reason. And when we start to look at where we are moving forward, we're going to be moving into a space of healing. We're going to be moving into a space that more humans are going to be recognizing that people need to heal in order to move forward. And when we go through all of that, we can only come out better. Like there's this idea of, I mentioned it before, but this idea of the wounded healer. You know, like we some of us came into wounds into the profession to make a difference in the world, to create what we didn't have, to use maybe special abilities that we gained through that in order to make the lives better for students. The pandemic in the past few years have been a lot of our wounds. Mm-hmm. We can come out of that taking something from it and moving forward from that. And I don't know how that makes anybody feel right now, because frankly, it might be in this place of like, dang it, I would like that time to be here now. I am so sick of dealing with where I am. But at the end of the day, our energy comes from being the people who are changing the lives of other people. And it doesn't get more powerful than that.
Wow. I'll tell you right now, I got goosebumps. I this has been a good episode. I really have enjoyed talking to you. Divergentedu.com is your website, right? And on there, yep, they can order your books. Like we said, it all started with The Fire Within or Divergent Edu. It was kind of a simultaneous. It's just A Fire Within.
Yeah. One.
But then you've got Reignite the Flames, and then you've got The Educator's Matchbook. So I encourage all of our listeners to go to that website and check that out. You've got a blog on there. You've got all kinds of resources. You even teach courses, right? So that's a great resource. Do you got anything in the works coming out?
Yeah, so I have a book on the wounded healer that I'm writing with a psychologist friend of mine. And it really is going to be for anybody. It's my first book that's not education focused, but definitely applies. Like I'm inputting as much as I can about educators in there as possible. So that one is really going to be, it's going to address, you know, wounds that we've gotten as people. It addresses, as humans, it addresses the idea of being a healer and what that means in the more non-traditional sense. And then it also talks about sort of the most important idea of the wounded healer for me, which is that we, as being someone in a healing profession, we can only help somebody else heal as well as we ourselves have healed. So, you know, for example, if I'm a dysregulated teacher or I struggle with dysregulation, it's going to be a lot more difficult for me to teach a student to regulate. So that's really what the wounded healer is about.
Wow. If our listeners, in addition to going to your website, if is there any other way they can contact you or follow you? I know you have a Twitter presence. Any other social media that that are more of our young and hip listeners are involved in that maybe can track you down?
Yes, the Twitter is at FreilichM. It's FreilichM. I am Freilich Mandy on Instagram and Divergent EDU and Mandy Freilich on Facebook. And then I do have a TikTok account.
Oh.
But I think I have 3 videos on it. So yeah, that's, I mean, the hip and trendy people are there. I know, I just haven't been that hip and trendy yet.
Well, we'll get you influence status sooner and later. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Mandy. It has been our honor and pleasure to have an opportunity to visit with you. And we certainly hope that our listeners got something out of it.
Thank you for being on here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesn'tfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesn'tfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.